This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dan, a bunch of players said you guys practiced the Hail Mary. How close was that to perfection of that play, and kind of how much time do you guys put into practicing that?
Yeah, I thought the plays also leading up to it were a really big deal, because when you're in that spot, you don't have timeouts, and we used one early, obviously, to get out of bounds, to give yourself a chance at the next play. And I thought the real factor was there of Zach Ertz, you know, going up to get a tip, to keep the ball alive, for Noah to get there, because it's hard just to go up and snatch it. So you almost have to go up and expect a bounce or a tip to go. And I thought Jaden did a fantastic job of, you know, buying time, over to the right side. I don't know how long the play was. Maybe you guys might, but it took a long-ass time. 13 seconds, yeah. I felt every bit of them.
The play before it is a crucial play. Obviously, the execution of the play itself, it's a long-shot probability play. But it's, you know, a chance from the 48-yard line. It is not a good chance and almost a zero chance from your own 35-yard line. And the incompetence of the Bears not to cover the boundaries, the sidelines with 6 seconds to go, is a big part of the final two-play sequence. They executed it perfectly, and at the end, it was so well done. I don't think I've watched this play as closely as I can. Zach Ertz definitely up there. I think Stevenson's the only one to get a finger or a hand on the ball, but it doesn't matter. Ertz is up there. He's 6'6". He's athletic. He's got hops. You know, he and McCaffrey are in the middle of that. You got Noah Brown behind it. You got Terry trailing at like the 6-yard line right around there. And it was perfect execution. And at the same time, for something like that to happen, typically you need the other team to help out a bit. And the Bears had number 29 Stevenson for the first 4.1 seconds of the play over yucking it up and jawing it up and talking trash with the fans. And by the way, somebody, a friend of mine pointed this out. He said, you went through the last play very interestingly, and you covered everything except for one thing. Why didn't the Bears call a timeout? They had timeouts left, and they should have called the timeout certainly when they saw Stevenson not involved in the play. Yeah, it's a great point. They had still multiple timeouts left. Usually you'll see that defensively. You'll see a timeout just to see what the alignment is, just to go over responsibilities. You know, we got you guys here. We got one guy that's not going to let anybody behind him, etc. They had a spy on the play. I don't know what he was spying. I guess Jaden could have taken off. And with Jaden, you could have, you know, thrown the ball all the way across the field to Eckler, you know, at the 25 or whatever. Who knows? Ben Standing is with us. He was there. Wow. I mean, I start with you every week with just, you know, your overall impressions. We've been doing this for a couple of years. Usually it's, it was hit. That's an all-timer. That is an all-timer. Give me your thoughts. Give me what your mindset was there towards the end. Were you packing it up, getting ready to get to the locker room? What were you doing?
Yeah, so I don't have to file a story like at the buzzer. I do technically have to write a little bit, a couple takeaways for the Athletic. So I'd already started earlier about, you know, hey, they, you know, the defense played well and they held on, they didn't score enough in the red zone, whatever. And then it turned to, oh boy, I guess this is gonna be a tough one. And I was still in that mode when all of a sudden, you know, the last 25 seconds happened. I think the crazy part for me, Kevin, is that, look, we all know that the odds of a Hail Mary working are pretty low. But when it was happening, I was like, it didn't seem, I mean, it was crazy. Don't get me wrong. But I was like, yeah, okay. I kind of buy that it was going to happen on some level because of the way things have gone with Jaden being this sort of this miraculous figure that's come into our lives over the last, you know, few months. And the way that, you know, I still questioned some of the roster and some of the weaknesses and blah, blah, blah. But the vibe here is just off the charts, and it's kind of just continued to increase week over week. And so, you know, I don't know, you know, what do they say? Luck is the residue of design, or you know, karma or whatever. Like, all of those things are just really seem to be happening right now. And it's just mind boggling that this keeps happening. I mean, now that it's over, it seems like it would have just felt wrong if they had actually just blown that game the way it looked like they were going to, because of just how well things have gone so far. So yeah, it was crazy. You know the saying, you know, there's no cheering in the press box, and there wasn't cheering, but the amount of gasps and oh my gods and all that kind of stuff was pretty significant. I mean, nothing compares to the fans, to the players and coaches running onto the field. It was like everybody saw. I mean, it was an unbelievably incredible moment, and it was really fun to be there.
Yeah, I mean, the luck is the residue of design. You know, good begets good, all of this stuff. There is a vibe right now, and you just can't chalk it up to, okay, well, finally, you know, they're starting to get the breaks. They're starting to get the bounces. There is definitely a group of people that were picked for certain reasons. Obviously, the quarterback's the most important. Without him, none of this is happening at the level it's happening. But, you know, I talked about in my game take, I just think that there is just this feeling, all of them are speaking of, you know, a brotherhood and a caring for each other. You get that with a winning team, typically. And I don't know which comes first, the enthusiasm, the good attitude, the positivity, or the winning. But what do you think? You're around it every day. You've been in real dysfunctional environments out there. Why is this one so different?
Yeah, you know, so this morning I was looking back through some of the articles I wrote going back to, you know, OTAs and that time. And, you know, again, it's the most positive time of year for every team. So when we hear Jonathan Allen say, boy, I'm really invigorated with this, you know, with the vibe that's going on here. And you're like, okay, sure, I buy it, you know, whatever. Jerry McLaurin, kind of the same thing. Wow, I'm really excited to come in every day and this, that, and the other. And like, okay, sure, whatever. But then you kind of look back and realize that, you know, there was something for real. And then Jaden was part of that as well when they talked about his work ethic and getting in there so early. And then, you know, the Dan Quinn piece of this, you know, again, time will tell how this whole thing works out. But the number one thing that people discuss was that he is a guy that, you know, is a connector of people, that he relates to these people, the players, the coaches, he gets everybody to buy in. And you're like, okay, sure. I mean, that sounds good. And I get that he has that, but to what degree? And it just feels like, and then of course with Adam Peters bringing in, you know, again, they didn't go out and spend crazy money on guys, but they spent money on specific types of players. The Bobby Wagners, the Ecklers, the Zach Ertzes, they drafted specific types of players, these team captains. And somehow this has all combined together it really has changed the vibe there to such degree. I mean, like I said, all that is happening here, 6-2 for the first time since 2008, 4-0 at home to start a year for the first time since 2005. You know, needless to say, winning a game like that, so many of these things are impossible to explain to an extent. And, you know, PFF can't quantify what is happening here from a mood standpoint. But the momentum is definitely real, and it's been building. And, you know, I'm sort of, you know me, I've come on, I try to keep my feet on the ground with what's happening. And I think that's still a reasonable way to cover the team. But at the same point, I'm kind of like, after yesterday, I'm like, okay, well, this mood is taking over. It is no longer just, hey, this is a plucky story. These guys are you know, having a good run here. We'll see what happens. I mean, what can you say? In terms of, you know, forget playoffs or Super Bowl, but just in terms of playing together as a group, as a team, I mean, it is pretty legitimately – oh, I don't know. It's pretty legitimately inspiring. It's like movie inspiring because it isn't just, it doesn't quite make sense. And yet it is all working. And that goes, again, beyond just what we can look at X's and O's or who's on the roster. There's something else definitely happening.
Yeah, I mean, it does, you know, I want to give the organization and, you know, the owner and Peters and Quinn in particular with that staff a lot of the credit. But again, we know this sport. We're all fans of it. If you don't have number five at quarterback, it is not anywhere near the same thing. And what's ironic is I think we would have felt that way even if the Hail Mary had fallen to the ground. We would have felt like this is a team. But that would have been a gut-wrenching loss because they were the better team for pretty much 50 of the 60 minutes in the game. I mean, it's sports. These things happen. But I'm just curious. You were there. I'm watching on TV. There wasn't a moment that I thought that Chicago had a prayer in this game, even though you're saying, it's still 9-0, it's 12-0, they should be like 27-0, but they did, and they took the lead. That was stunning, on its own.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, look, this is a classic game, right? The one team is dominating, but they can't get in the end zone. They're kicking field goals, and the game is closer than it should be. And we all, you know, whichever side you're on of that, you're always like, oh, boy. You start to get nervous because you know that eventually the other team will break through and your side, you know, you only have so many opportunities realistically over a game to score. And then they don't, you know, they're not getting it done. And then they had the Zacchaeus touchdown taken away, et cetera. And then, you know, the DeAndre Swift touchdown, you know, kind of comes out of nowhere. You know, Caleb Williams certainly wasn't, you know, like at hit the peak of his powers, but some of the throws he started to make in late in the second half were pretty ridiculous. And you're right. Like it went from like, it feels pretty comfortable that they're going to get this done to, oh no, they're really going to blow this. I mean, let's not forget, you know, the Bears. I mean, I agree with your earlier point that the pass before the Hail Mary was so crucial and such a weird play for the Bears to just completely give it to Washington. You know, just to at least give them a shot at the Hail Mary. But the play earlier where they're at like the 2-yard line, Washington's 2-yard line, and then they do the handoff to the offensive lineman who can't even, you know, doesn't even secure the play. I mean, that if they score there, I mean, you know, you don't know how the game unfolds, of course, after that, but if they score there, they already have the lead, and Washington, you know, couldn't stop them on the next drive anyway. So, you know, that was as fortunate a break as anything that happened, even if the Bears have ultimately took the lead. But, yeah, I mean, Washington had so much going right for most of the game, except for they just couldn't score in the red zone. And for a team that's been, you know, highly efficient, at least since that Giants game, you know, it was an odd circumstance to see. But, yeah, it would have been absolutely brutal to have lost that game because, again, it was like, okay, can you believe in this team? Can you buy them as an actual contender? And not to say that the Hail Mary changing the result changes perspectives, but yeah, it kind of does. Right? I mean,
yeah.
If you lose it, it just, I mean, everybody's miserable.
Yeah, it's true, but I would have said that's one of those fluky losses. You just got to put it behind him, and you got to continue to play the way you've been playing, minus some of the mistakes that were made yesterday. Penalties, drops, you know, missed field goal, couple of opportunities, you know, touchdown called back Zacchaeus, touchdown, near touchdown to Ertz, you know, challenged, but you know, it probably was moving, you know, as he hit the ground. It just was one of those weird kind of setups. To the end, I want to ask you about a play in specifically. When they had the ball after Kramer, number 68, inexplicably got the opportunity to play Refrigerator Perry at the goal line and fumbled. On the Jaden scramble on 3rd and 5, A, did you think he got the first down? B, did Quinn get asked at all about whether or not he thought about challenging it or going for it 4th and inches? I know it was from their own 12-yard line, but I'm just curious as to what we know about that particular play.
Yeah, I think in real time, you know, sitting there with next to David Aldridge, and we were like thinking he got it, but then we're like, maybe that's a bad measurement. And, you know, to your point about should Quinn have challenged it or did he think about it? I'm not sure on either front, just because, you know, you're burning a timeout. If you get it wrong, obviously it's a huge deal.
It would have been their last timeout too.
Yeah, and obviously it's a huge deal to get it right. I wasn't there for Quinn because, you know, the locker room was happening simultaneously, but I did ask Jaden Daniels, like, was there any discussion about it? He's like, well, I don't know what they were discussing on the sidelines, but, you know, to me, like, yeah, I'm always aggressive. I always think, you know, go for it, but, you know, they're obviously going to make the call. I mean, I think I would have punted myself just because it's just way too risky to give the Bears the ball right there. The only, I guess, upside would have been you would have had more time on the clock if the Bears quickly score, but that just goes way past my level of risk taking on that play. But yeah, I do wonder about the spot. I mean, you guys saw better on TV than I probably did, but initially I did think he had it. But you know how the spots of the football, it's almost hard to argue about them one way or the other.
You've been around for a lot of these seasons. Greatest ending to a game in franchise history?
Oh, man. I mean, it kind of feels like it, right? I mean, I'm trying to think that the only other play I remember beyond, like, game-winning field goals, like the NFC Championship game in, what, 87 when Daryl Green helps sort of knock the ball away from Darren Nelson at the goal line, or he drops it, whatever. Like, that's the one I mean, that was not the same thing because it's on defense, but that was like the last one, the only one I could remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, that was nearly the last play. You're right. I didn't mention that one. That's a very good late play in a game. You know, Riggo's run comes with 10 plus minutes. The, you know, Daryl Grant return of Dexter's tip of Hogaboom's pass comes with a lot of time left. Daryl Green's punt return was in the third quarter. That's a good one. The Darren Nelson, Daryl Green play, that's like with 8 seconds left and they're going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think one of the things that really, stood out for me in the locker room after the game was, you know, for the last few weeks, you know, they beat the Cleveland game, they beat Cleveland, they keep winning and all these things. And I remember like asking different players, especially the guys who've been around for a bit, Jeremy Reeves, De'Ami Brown, and some others. And I was like, can you know, if I told you before the season started, would you have believed where you guys were? And, like, they just paused and thought and were like, you could just tell in their eyes, they're like, I can't really actually believe this is happening. Like Jeremy Reeves said after one game, he has no idea how to process this. And then so yesterday, without asking this, several players, Deron Payne, Sam Cosmi, John Bates, at like their second response to whatever was being asked was some version of, this doesn't usually go our way. And today it did, and it's been going this way. And, you know, this is an incredible feeling. And that's the thing, like, as much as like, this is obviously tremendous for Dan Quinn and Peters and Jaden and Bobby Wagner and whoever else is new. It's great for them just because it's sports and competition and they're coming out successful. But to have gone through the chaos of the last several years, I mean, it is, and then to see this happening, as we know, as a reporter, as fans, whatever, we know how this is supposed to go or how it has gone. And to see it go the complete opposite, it's not just that they're steadily improving. This is miles and miles and miles different than what was happening. You can see the genuine human aspect of it. They're like, wow, I can't believe this is my life now. I can't believe this is actually, we're actually doing the same thing we always do, except we're winning. And the bounces are literally going our way. And that's, the human element of that comes into play more than it has typically through a standard year. Especially when, you know, again, for these guys, it never works out. And right now, nothing is going wrong.
Yeah, and I think all of that is great. And I think it's still the number one, like, take a step back, look at this team, and number one on the list is Jaden Daniels. Because without him, maybe they've got a nice little, 2018 with, Alex Smith. They were 5-2, remember, before, the bad thing happened. He broke his leg. But it just wasn't the same. Like, they're a dynamic football team offensively with one of the top quarterbacks in the league right now. Right now. He is an elite quarterback. And when you have that part taken care of, you can be, you're going to be in it. Every year, You're in it right now at 6-2. Like, we can sit there, Ben. We did this, I think, last week. We can sit there and say, all right, Daniel Jones, the Cardinals, Deshaun Watson, the Panthers, and even yesterday, let's face it, as good as Caleb was on those final two drives, it was one of the worst passing performances in NFL history through almost 3.5 quarters. He completed 4 balls for 36 yards until there were 10 minutes left in the game. Like, I've never seen anything like that. But with that said, you know, number 5 is what keeps me away from just focusing on who they've beaten and the performances by the other team. And Chicago helped out yesterday. There's no doubt they helped out. But you got number 5, which means you got a shot against anybody at any time. Like, this team's legit. They're a contender. I don't think that's crazy. Do you?
No. I don't think it's crazy anymore. I mean, to your point, like, you know, again, when we typically break down quarterbacks, we look at the, you know, umpteen different statistics and we watch the film and we talk about things in this sort of granular detail, but it's really not what's so important about the quarterback is it makes everybody else on the team feel they have a chance every game. I mean, that's the difference. And that confidence, again, it's not something that could be measured or even explained at times. It just exists. And sure, the final play, the pass itself, the Hail Mary, yeah, sure, of course, they practice it, but it's a fluky-ish play. We all understand that. But his ability to scramble the 13 seconds beforehand, not saying nobody else could have done that, but how many other quarterbacks would have been able to keep that
going? I don't think it was 13
going.
Seconds, but still, your point is well taken. It's 3 or 4. It's Mahomes, it's Allen, it's Jackson. There's a short list of people that make the first part of that play perfect from an execution standpoint.
Yeah, and this has just popped into my head. I remember watching live when Doug Flutie threw the Hail Mary for Boston College. It happened to be on my birthday back in the day, and what stood out about that, it wasn't just that they completed Hail Mary, that like it was like a national TV game. It was that he did it. Like, that guy was incredibly special that year. He wins the Heisman, right?
Exactly.
It made sense that he did it. And that's what felt like yesterday. Of course, Jaden Daniels did this because this is what this kid is doing. And the whole team is lifted up accordingly. And, you know, even like the description of the play, yes, of course, they all want to explain, hey, this wasn't just luck. We practiced this, and I, you know, buy all of it. But the detail to go into it, this random play that's, you know, probably never going to work, you're only going to use it once or twice, and they talked in such detail about how they planned it, what the execution was, that they think about these things. And those details are things, again, just in these places, I'm sure they ran these kind of plays and practice over the years, but to the degree of the details, I mean, Washington was more likely to have the Stevenson aspect with the guy screwing off in the corner and not paying attention versus
right.
Here's all the details that have to happen. These receivers go here. Ertz is in the middle, et cetera. And these guys are professionals, but there is something to be said when you have the quarterback, you can always believe that something is possible, and no better example than yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, and I kind of emphasized the same thing at the beginning of the show. It's not just that this memorable game-ending play happened, all-time memorable game-ending play, but it's who threw the ball. And the fact that we're at the beginning of something that, you know, knock on wood, he stays healthy. But this is the greatest start to a rookie season at that position in NFL history. He's already legitimately an elite quarterback in this league with the way he's playing. And, you know, all due respect to Sam Howell and Taylor Heineke and Carson Wentz and Alex Smith and Ryan Fitzpatrick, who else? Case Keenum, Colt McCoy. Like, if any of those guys threw the same ball to get you to, you know, 3-4 or to 4-4 on the season, it's not the same. It's memorable, but it's not the same. Injury-wise, how'd they make out? I know that Cornelius Lucas was injured.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think we're going to have to find all that out today from Quinn. I don't think there was too much conversation about injuries other than Lucas was seen in a walking boot after the game. So, you know, obviously we'll have to see what that is, especially if Brandon Coleman is unable to go. He was out this week, obviously, with the concussion. You know, they may have to figure out a new plan here at tackle or bring somebody in to help out in a pinch. So we'll see about that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just at general speaking and still a little bit of a loss for words over this. And yeah. By the way, can I just say as a side note, like, you know, after, you know, games, you always see fan videos or whatever of the reaction. The amount of videos that are being out that are out there that are just so incredible of whether it's people in the stands. My favorite one is probably things from NFL.com where they had a cameraman on the field when the play happened, and he runs onto the field and he's zooming in and out of all the chaotic scenes, and you see the various players and coaches and in various forms of emotion, like Michael Dieter, the backup offensive lineman, is just like jumping up and down like a 4-year-old in the middle of the field. Other guys are jumping on top of each other. And, you know, Dan Quinn, you know, you saw him. He's sort of, as he said, kind of going the Jim Valvano route of, I don't know where to run, but I'm just going to keep moving. Like, all of that is just so incredible because of the fact, again, that it just doesn't happen here. It hasn't been, and then just seeing the national attention here. I mean, this is all anybody's talking about, and it's not just, I mean, Hail Marys do happen, but there is something extra that this one, again, and you can just tell by everybody talking about it.
You know, I've always felt this way, and I've talked about this in the past, especially the, you know, people of a certain age in the game, whether it's media-wise or former coaches, former players, you know, it's not current players. And there is a desire for Washington to be a franchise again that matters. For a lot of people in the league, for a lot of long-time people in the league, like there are people you'll hear, you know, Belichick, and you could hear it in Nance's voice. You know, you could hear it. You're going to hear it a lot that it because if this were Jacksonville or Carolina or Arizona, it's not the same. When the Packers got good with Brett Favre in the 90s, it had been so long since the Lombardi years, nearly 30 years, you know, kind of similar to this stretch. And there was great league fanfare about the return of the Packers to the limelight. I'm not going to put it at that level because Lombardi's Packers are, you know, they hold a sacred place in the history of the game. But there are a lot of people around the league, starting with the commissioner, by the way, who would love to see this market resuscitated. And it takes winning. It takes winning big, and it takes kind of a superstar at quarterback and a few of those moments that are like indelible that you're never – ever going to forget. And we've gotten a lot of that in just 8 games, which is really kind of remarkable. This was not a slow build to feeling this way. Nobody could have predicted this. Great job. I'll talk to you later in the week.
Awesome, man. Thanks.
Ben Standig from The Athletic, everybody. Subscribe to The Athletic. He's got a podcast, Standig Room Only, and Ben can be followed on X on Twitter at Ben Standig. There was a video that somebody sent to me involving Emmanuel Forbes. I want to get to that. Also, you'll hear my conversation last night right after the game with Zach Ertz from the locker room. We'll do that next. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Aguanta Daniels, no tiene con quién. Ahora sí Daniels. A lanzar a lo profundo del terreno de juego. Ahí está la recepción. ¡Touchdown! ¡Touchdown de Washington! ¡Touchdown! ¡Está adentro! ¡Touchdown! ¡Commanders! ¡El Ave María funcionó! ¡Apareció el 85! ¡Tras un rebote, Noah Brown se convierte en el héroe de todo Washington!
Wait, so that was Juan Romero, but you said that was the NFL Spanish broadcast. That sounded like it was a Washington.
Well, it was the Commanders Spanish broadcast.
Oh,
yeah.
you told me it was the NFL Spanish broadcast. Like it was NFL Network Spanish broadcast. So this is a team of announcers that calls Washington games in Spanish.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that was excellent.
It was excellent. They crushed it.
That was excellent. Well done, Juan Romero, and your partner. Sorry, Denton didn't give me his name. If you get his name, we can credit him too. Outstanding, for sure. So real quickly, two things. Number one, I did see my guy Benji sent me the video of Emmanuel Forbes picking up Jalen Jones and Josh Blackwell, two of the Bears defenders who were out there on the field afterwards, and, you know, picking them up, putting his arm around them. Yeah, class act. Great. I didn't see Emmanuel Forbes out there that much. I'd have to pull up the snap counts to see, but he didn't appear to be in the game that much defensively. The other guy that didn't play, he was active, but Jordan McGee, I didn't see him on the field. I was looking for him. He may have played a couple plays, but I didn't see him or don't remember him. The final play, the Hail Mary play, Montez Sweat was not out there for Chicago. Bad idea to handle the play the way they handled it. Stevenson's over there, you know, yucking it up with the fans. That was brilliant. And Montez Sweat, the guy that actually really played well. The one time he chased Jaden down on that naked boot, I thought I did not think it was a horse collar because I think he let it go immediately. But I did think it was a bit of a hip drop, maybe, on Jaden. But, man, can Montez run for somebody his size? We've always known it, the athlete that he is. But he's the one that actually chased Jaden down on that naked bootleg. But he was not out there for the final snap of the game. All right. Zach Ertz last night jumped on my podcast following the game. He was in on that final play. I've watched the play so many times. I don't think he got even a fingertip on it. I think it was all Stevenson, number 29, who gets his fingers, part of his hand, onto the ball, and it ends up being projected backwards to a wide-open Noah Brown. But I, you know, we started off by talking about that final play, and I said, just give me what your vantage point of that play from being down there in position at the goal line. Tell us what you thought. Describe it from your vantage point.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jaden just did a phenomenal job being able to have us buy time and just giving us a shot to be downfield. Obviously, the way the game went, we feel like we probably left a lot of points on the board, and just allowing us to be able to go out there, find a way to win, just shows a testament to the character of this team. We're never going to give up, whether it's 20 seconds or 12 seconds or 60 minutes. So we got a lot of belief in the guys in this locker room, and it was a really good game.
How often do you guys practice that play? I'm just curious.
We talk about it. You rep it in walkthroughs. You're never going to ask guys in practice at the end of a practice to go sprint 60 yards on the field for a play.
Yeah.
Where a lot of guys are jumping up to one another. So rarely do you rep it full speed in the NFL. But I think it's a testament. Guys have played a lot of football in this league. Guys know that play like the back of their hand. And so I'm kind of the jumper. You got a receiver kind of behind me, probably 5 yards back, another guy in front of me. And it was just a play that I don't know if I got a hand on the ball. It was almost a hockey assist where I went up for the ball and the guy maybe tipped it up and then it fell right to Noah.
Yeah, I've watched it several times. It looks like Stevenson got his hand on it. Your hand may have skimmed it, but you went up. Noah's behind you. Terry's in front of you. So that is the design, to have somebody behind and somebody in front in case it gets batted either way. What are you supposed to do at your height? It's obvious why you're on the field with your hands, your athleticism, but are you supposed to tap it backwards into the end zone or try to catch
it? The first job is try and go up and get the ball, but by the time I jumped, it felt like I had two hands on my shoulder pads kind of holding me down, so I really just stuck out a hand and kind of just gave someone a shot. I don't really know. I didn't really design it to go backwards. I don't even know for sure if I got the hand on it, but no, it was there in the right place, and it was just phenomenal that I just floated right into his hands like that.
I am curious, and I doubt that this is the case, but because of your size and your athletic ability, would you have been out there on defense?
We got a lot of guys on defense. We have not talked about me going out there on past teams. I've been a guy that has to go out there. But I prefer those defensive guys to go out there and do it. It's not comp. I don't want to play defense. I don't play defense.
Right.
If they ask me to, I would go out there. But we got a lot of guys on defense. Jeremy Chin immediately jumps to mind. The guy is a freak athlete, 6'3", long arms. He's probably a guy that you'd want out there jumping as well. So we've never talked about it. I've done it in the past, but I got a lot of confidence that our guys in the other situation.
One of the reasons I asked is it seems like the rule defensively, right, is nobody gets behind you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly what they're taught. But I don't know if you remember Rob Gronkowski going out there on the Hail Mary situation, and I'm not trying to look like that. So for me, it's just going out there and whatever they ask me to do, I'll do, but I'm glad I was able to be on offense for it.
Have you ever been a part of one of these that was successful?
I have not been a part of it. Crazy to be a part of it for the first time. And obviously the vibes are high after a game like that.
Take us into the locker room. The reaction to this one with coaches, teammates was what?
Jubilant, I think. I don't know if just so much joy. I mean, we should have put up so many more points in our eyes as an offense. I don't know if that game should have even come down to that. But for us to believe the way we did and that never stopped, the 10-yard out that he threw to Terry was a huge part of that. If we're 10 yards further behind, we're not able to throw a Hail Mary. So there's just little plays that continually add up in a football game, and you can't stop believing.
So true. The play before that, to take that sideline with 6 seconds and to get it done in 4 seconds, really set up the opportunity to go for that. You've pretty much answered my next question, and that is, you know, before all of the shenanigans started over the last couple of minutes and the last few seconds, it just seemed like you guys had dominated the game, and yet you were behind inexplicably almost.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, guys were – we felt as an offense, we did not hold up our end of the bargain today. The defense played phenomenally. Special teams played well. But as an offense, we got a lot to improve on. I mean, I know the stats are going to be favorable. But whenever we got, seems like, from the 40-yard in, and I was a culprit of it on the touchdown. I don't know if it was a touchdown or not, but they ruled it incomplete, and I just got to find a way to come up with that ball. And so, yeah, we won the game, but my mindset is I got to make one more play for this team, and that game's not coming down to that. So that's my mindset, and I know there's a lot of guys in the locker room with that same mindset.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I mean, that was such a close call. It was challenged. It was upheld. Did you think you caught it and maintained possession to the ground in the end zone?
I thought it was a touchdown, obviously. I don't think it should have been ruled incomplete to start with, but I feel like when it's close like that, you're probably going to stick with the ruling on the field. So I'm not surprised they didn't overturn it based on what I saw on the film, per se. But at the same time, it felt like it shouldn't have never got to that point.
How did Jaden look to you?
He looked like himself. I mean, the dude is the leader of the team. People would call him a rookie. I was just telling some of these other reporters, you know, I think the rookie label has got to be off. The guy is just one of the best players on our team, the leader of this team. The dude lead plays with his heart and soul each and every week for us. And so the rookie label is off to me.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Physically, though, did he look 100% to you?
Yeah, he looked like himself. He was the same Jaden.
I'm sorry, say that again.
To me, he was the same Jaden. Sorry.
When did you have a sense that he would play and he would start today?
I honestly didn't know exactly what the plan was. Just allow the coaches to do what they do. Jaden do what he does, and I was just being focused on being the best version of myself.
One more for Zach Ertz. You've won a Super Bowl. I mean, you caught the game-winning touchdown pass in Super Bowl 52. You've played on some very good football teams. I'm not asking you if this is a Super Bowl contending team, but on a night like tonight, I'll ask you this. What's possible for this team?
The opportunity to go 7-2. I know you don't want to hear that answer, but I think we're just continually building this thing, continually get better. We preach ascending each and every week, and I think that's the what I love about this team. We got a locker room full of guys that love the process, love practicing, focus on getting better every week. And I know guys are going to come in tomorrow, watch the film, and they're going to be the hardest on themselves. And so I can't say how far we're going to go. That's for everyone else to talk about, but for us, focus on being 7-2 next week.
Zach Ertz, everybody, I really appreciate you making time for me. Congrats on this incredible night, on this incredible win. Good luck next week against the Giants. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, Zach Ertz last night jumping on with me on my podcast from the locker room. He's been outstanding. Terry McLaurin's been outstanding, too. Something that may surprise you about Terry when we come back. Also, Austin Seibert on track for something that's never happened here in Washington for a kicker. And I'll give you the Giants look-ahead point spread. More than look-ahead, the early line is out. Kevin Sheehan Show, the next segment coming up with those three things after these words from a few of our sponsors. Austin Seibert has now made 23 field goals, which is the most by a Washington kicker through the first 8 weeks of a single season. The previous high was Mark Mosley, who made 20 field goals consecutively, by the way, in weeks 1-8 in the 82 strike-shortened season, a season in which Mosley was MVP, by the way, the only kicker to ever win MVP. Keep in mind, too, Seibert's only kicked in 7 of the 8 games. He was not the kicker in the opener. His 88 total points through week 8 passes Mosley for the 83 season, the most points in franchise history through 8 weeks of a single season. And keep in mind again, he's only played in 7 games. How about this? Terry McLaurin right now, 4th in the league in reception yards. You know, like he started off those first 2 games averaging 4 yards per catch. He's now 4th in the league in reception yards behind CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, and Ja'Marr Chase. Now, it is true he's played 8 games and several receivers, including Lamb, Jefferson, and several receivers behind him, have played 7. So that does make a difference. But 14.5 yards per catch at this point, not bad. And then looking ahead to Sunday, the Giants play tonight. By the way, the smell test, 9-6-1, so a winning weekend with the Giants tonight, plus 6 against the Steelers. Giants short week after playing the Steelers on Monday Night Football. Washington is just a 3.5-point favorite in the Meadowlands Sunday, 1 o'clock, to try to get to 7-2, which would be the first time they've been 7-2 since 1996, the last season at RFK. They were actually 7-1 and lost a game at Buffalo to drop to 7-2. But it's literally been 28 years since they were 7-2. And Denton's right. I looked this up on multiple sites. After the Eagles' impressive win yesterday, they are now the favorite again to win the division. And we're going to have two massive NFC East games. The 14th of November on a Thursday night at the Link, and then later in the season, December 22nd, against Philly at home. Already start looking at that game. Let me just see what the scheduled Sunday night game is for that week. Tampa at Dallas is the scheduled Sunday night game. Philly, Washington, Sunday night football, December 22nd. Book it. All right, we didn't get to any of the other NFL. We will do that tomorrow. What a day. What a memory. Yes, the single greatest game-ending play in franchise history, and probably the number one regular season play in franchise history. It's certainly near the top of the list. That one has more competition. Chris is up next. Back tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.